And now, an Envision Financial podcast with Luke Smith on Canberra's 2CC.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And today's exciting topic is how to maximise income within your portfolio. And I say exciting because who wouldn't be excited about maximising your income?
Yeah, look, this one's becoming more and more prevalent the more conversations I have with people around what do you need when you retire. Far too often people come in and say, well, what should I have? And my answer or my rebuttal to that is, well, what do you need? Because if you can understand the amount of income that you would like to have in retirement, there is a direct correlation to the amount of asset you'll need to produce it, assuming or understanding the amount of income that your portfolio will generate. And what I mean by that is this. Let's say you needed $80,000 a year. Okay, everyone comes in my office and says, Luke, we're just average people. We're not extravagant. And I go, oh, great. I'm yet to meet anybody that is. And the next line out of their mouth could be, I just need 50.
Mm-hmm.
A lady said to me the other week, I just need 400 a year, but I shop at Target.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an average person.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, you're not, darling.
No.
There's nothing average about that. So if you've got $2 million at 4% income, that will generate $80,000 of cash flow without touching your capital, assuming 4%. And 3.5 to 4 with some franking credits, very, very attainable. Now, your asset allocation and the level of risk that you take on will have a direct impact on the type of assets you buy. And today we're going to talk about the areas of your portfolio that are very good for generating income and why I'm pro controlling the income stream of your super fund in retirement. Now, the Australian equity sector will generate an income stream depending on what you buy. And it's important to look at where your income comes from. And I say that because you could hold a bank stock and get between 3 and 5%. You could hold a growth stock like CSL. Not big income payer. Great company, highest quality, great earnings, very strong from a capital perspective. You don't hold CSL for income. Like you don't drive a truck to race a car. A truck's there to pull things, not race things. When it comes to looking at the assets you're going to buy, don't leap to the misconception that everything provides a good income stream. And I say that because everybody comes in and says, oh, I'm going to buy some banks and get a great yield. Well, not at the moment. And what I mean is CBA is trading at around $140, right? Record levels, most expensive bank in the world. Phenomenal, phenomenal uplift in value. But if you buy it today, you're getting low threes in relation to income. Now, in the past, everybody said, oh, we get 4 or 5% income from a bank stock plus the franking credits. Well, you've got to look at the price you pay to buy it. If you're getting $4 on 100, you're getting 4%. You're getting $4 on 140, you're not getting 4%, you're getting less. So then I would say, well, why are you buying it? Because you're not buying it for income. Because you get more in a term deposit.
Yeah, and generally speaking, many people would suggest you're not buying it for growth either, because the anticipation is that as a bank share, it's not expected to grow, although obviously it has done in recent years.
Yeah, and that's it. Am I now buying at the very, very top?
Mm.
So now you're torn between income and capital, and this is where I always come back and say, what have you got? Why have you got it? Now, I'm not saying CBA is bad. CBA is lovely.
Especially if you bought it 5 years ago.
But you paid $70 for it, you're a rock star. And that's great because, again, investment and superannuation is a long-term play, and this is a great way to increase the value of your portfolio. But look at your assets and look at the individual holding that you're looking to buy and ask yourself, why am I buying it? Am I just chasing a fad? Am I trying to get some upside in my share price? If you are, there's nothing wrong with that. You're not going to die doing that. That's okay. Just accept that if it falls to 100 for whatever reason, and I'm not saying it's going to, but if it falls, you're buying at the highest price it has ever traded at. And there's a lot of very expensive, good quality stocks on the market at the moment, and it's very difficult to buy things at very strong income streams. So people want to be looking at some Australian equities. Listed property trusts. You can buy a listed property trust or a property ETF. You can even buy a direct share in the property sector. That listed property trust space will give you a running yield of between 4.5 and 6, depending on the underlying assets of that type of investment. So listed property is very good from a distribution perspective, and you also get some uplift in value. But like any sector, you accept there's going to be up and there's going to be down. But if we're waiting over the longer term and we're getting a very good income stream of 5 or 6%, that's helping us fund the income that we said we need to live on at some point in time when you stop working. So coming in to see somebody like me and having some thorough understanding and clarity around what do I need, really, really important. Similar to, do I buy an investment property or do I buy a commercial property? They have different income profiles. The income from a residential property, not amazing. The income from a commercial property could be 3-4% more than a residential property. So again, why am I buying it? More importantly, what is it doing for me? Because we want some capital growth. We want some income. We also have the option to buy something like, you know, the hybrids and the converting preference shares. You know, we've done a show on that, and they're a wonderful vehicle for producing very solid income from very high quality companies and a great protection against the falling cash market. So again, why am I buying it? You buy those types of things for income. They're not there for high growth. Their share price does not move significantly. They are income payers, but they're on the defensive side of the portfolio. So we buy Australian shares for income and growth, but we need to look at a more granular level as to what am I going to buy and what does it do? And then I want to think about, okay, what does the property side of things give me? Can I buy an A-REIT, which is a real estate trust? It'll give me between 4 and 6 of distributable income. Some will pay quarterly, some will pay monthly, some will pay half yearly. So think about the income profile that you're going to need, because generating your dividends in retirement and controlling the income from your portfolio, I think, is one of the most important parts of investing and knowing where you're going to get your return from. The other big upside of the Australian equity sector is the use of franking credits. You know, franking credits were so good, Bill tried to take them. Now, that didn't turn out so good for Bill, but it's worked wonderfully for the Australian investor, because in a pension that is a tax-free environment, all of the accumulated franking credits that you get are returned to you in a check from the ATO. So buying Australian shares and controlling the franking income is very important to, again, that continuity of earnings, so that you can fund as much of your living expense as possible from distributable income and not having to sell down capital to live the way that you want to live in retirement.
You've mentioned franking credits a couple of times now, and one of the interesting things about franking credits is that not all shares have them.
No, correct.
And in fact, some shares are partially franked. How is that possible?
So all that happens there, and again, a great one, a bit like buying a bank stock, I get a great yield. Well, first you want to say, what's the earnings and what's the share price? With franking credits, you want to look at the part of the market that you're investing in and the particular company, and a lot like income. CBA, fully franked, which means you get all of the tax credit on your distribution. Partially franked, Macquarie Bank, about 40%. So they'll give you some of the tax credit, but like Macquarie with everything, they want their nose in the trough a little bit more than everybody else, so they're going to keep 60% of them. So you need to look at the stock and say, what am I going to get? What's the income profile, or what's the yield? And then what are the franking credits that I will get when my distributions are paid? Because it can make a significant difference. Now, you don't get franking credits on international investments, and you don't get franking credits on property. So it's just an Australian thing. International holdings are generally of more of a growth bias with an income stream of 1 to 3, depending on the area that you're investing in. But yeah, highly speculative stuff generally doesn't pay a lot of dividend, because it's all about growth and an increase in earnings. So don't go to the international sector primarily for income. You want to look at your Australian shares, your property, and that includes infrastructure. Infrastructure provides a lot of very good stable income. And then maximise the use of franking credits as part of your super fund or pension account. And that's why I say you need to be in a super fund that lets you control these things. It's not that we like or don't like certain funds. And I say regularly, a mini's never going to pull a horse float. That doesn't mean we don't like minis. But if you're in an industry fund that gives you no control over your franking credits because it's done at a fund level, not an account or a member level, you're choosing to miss out. And on some big balances, that could be tens of thousands of dollars every year that you could be getting paid from the ATO that you're just not getting because of the fund that you are in. It's not that they don't get it, it's just they don't give it to you. So it's not about, is this one better than that one? Can I control the things that are important to me or can I not? And I find most people become acutely aware of where their income is being generated when they turn the income tap off and move into retirement phase.
Luke Smith from Envision Financial is with me today, and we're asking how to maximise income within your portfolio. We've covered a fair bit of territory already. Yep. What are the key things to remember when it comes to managing your income within your investment portfolio? Yeah,
look, I can't stress enough the importance of understanding where your return is coming from. If you're in a fund and you get an annualised return on your statement every year, that's great, and that's not going to do you any damage while you're working. But I generally find that people become more concerned about where their income is being generated from and what they are actually holding, as opposed to this balanced option, this growth option, but I don't really know what's in there. So have an understanding of what you need to live on, because someone like me is going to have a hard time telling you whether it is or isn't feasible if you can't give me a rock solid number, like saying to a builder, how much does a house cost? If you don't know how many bedrooms and how many cinemas you want, it's impossible for the builder to be able to give you an indicative figure of what it's going to cost. So understand your known costs. And I'd say most people have 10 to 15 of fixed costs. And then you've got your discretionary understanding of whatever, you know, a normal person is in your eyes. Could be anything. But have some clarity around what you need. Because somebody like me will then be able to say, well, if you want that and you don't want to touch capital, you'll need this. And we can work that backwards. Look at your asset allocation and make sure that your risk profile is appropriate and allows you to maintain exposures to assets that can generate good, strong income. If you're too defensive, you're going to preclude yourself from being able to maximize the income in your portfolio. If you're too aggressive and you hold a huge allocation to international, for example, international doesn't provide a lot of distributable income. It will give you capital growth, but it doesn't spew out a lot of income by way of distribution. Look at the Australian equity sector and hold reoccurring income from a well-diversified portfolio of stocks. You know, you can't just assume that buying a bank stock in the current environment will give you a very high yield, because income and share prices have an inverse relationship. The higher the price of CBA goes, the lower the yield you're going to get if you were to buy it at the moment. So look at the income profile of what you're going to buy. Don't just assume that it pays a lot, because the higher the share price goes, the less you're getting from a yield standpoint. Think about the profile of the company you're going to buy. CBA is very different to a CSL or a Cochlear. CSL and Cochlear are both wonderful companies, but they are not income providers. They are capital growth. And they've done a very, very good job of that, especially Cochlear. That thing is just second to none.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't buy that and go, oh, I really don't like it because it doesn't give me a lot of income. It's not gonna. It's not for that. Just like a mini's not going to pull a horse load. Consider the property sector. Am I buying listed property? Am I buying physical property? If you're buying listed property, look at an ETF, look at an A-REIT, a property fund. You should be able to get 4 to 6% of distributable income paid monthly. From a property standpoint, think about your portfolio. Am I buying residential at a yield of 3? Am I buying commercial with a yield of 6 to 8? So understand what the sector provides and make the most of it in conjunction with the franking credits available from Australian shares. If you buy an ETF in the Australian equity sector, you get the franking credits. You buy a share, you get the franking credits. And as you pointed out before the ad break, doesn't have to be fully franked, can be partially franked. So you get some of the credits, not all of them. And the example we had before the break was CBA is fully franked, Macquarie isn't. So there's a good example. So if you control your franking credits, you've got a great chance of maximising your income and funding the majority of your living costs from dividends, protecting the longevity of your capital.
Well, Luke, it's time to ask, where can listeners get more information?
Yeah, office number 6260-4749, envisionfinancial.com.au on the internet. We've got the podcast, The Strategy Stacker, Luke Talks Money on iTunes and Spotify. We've got Envision Financial Canberra on the YouTube channel. You can subscribe to that and get a back catalogue of all of our shows and watch it on your phone. We've got the Strategy Stacker handle on the Tiki Toker. We've got YouTube Shorts, and all of these types of things are in Smart Money Strategy, your ultimate guide to financial planning, in all good bookstores and Amazon.
Indeed, Luke, that's it for today. Thanks very much for popping by.
We'll see you next week.
And we'll catch up with you again next Friday afternoon at the same time, straight after the